Let me read this verse out of Luke 22 just to get us started. Luke 22, this is 29 to 30. It says, "And just as my Father has granted me a kingdom, I now grant you the right to eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, and you will sit on thrones." I like that verse for us as we get started because it talks about this mandate for leadership, right, that we have as fathers in our homes. But but the other part of it that I'm drawn to is this idea that there is a place for all of us in his kingdom, and he created us, each of us, for a purpose in his kingdom. It's not as though that he created us by accident and he's like, oh, dang, there's Jamal. I got to find something for him to do. You know, he created Jamal and Scotty and Cam for a purpose, for an eternal purpose. So let's start with that question, is that being a kingdom father means we understand that God created us to have a place in his kingdom, that we have a part to play. He has an assignment for us. I think about Ephesians 2:10 that talks about we were created, right, for good works. So each of you take a turn with this. When was the first time that you realized God created you with intent, plans for you, meaning that it felt personal for you? We'll start with Jamal and then work our way down.
So for me, I would say it was my big grandma. You know what I mean? Great grandma, if you need a translation. But she would, every time I saw her, she would be like, "Boy, you're something special. God gonna do something in your life." And this is at the same time I was like learning about like World War II, civil rights. So I'm like, well, you got Martin Luther King, you got like Hitler, like what great can be different things in different spaces. But you know, I always, I think with her, she just always like embedded in me that like, there was something I was to do in this world, and but also like kind of with the faith, like that I needed to explore God to figure it out. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Do you feel like she had to convince you of that, or did her saying it?
She just said it so much where it was like,
no, sure.
And then
you didn't have a choice not to believe it.
She would just pat all the other kids, but she would like say that to me. So I was like, okay, all right, maybe she not just being nice, like she means something. So
that's awesome, Scotty.
Yeah, I mean, my whole life. I'm very approachable, like to a fault, right? Like my wife even says I have a very approachable face. I don't know if that's a comment or not, right? You know, but when I was little, everybody, you know, would talk to me, and then when I found out in high school that I could relate with a lot of people, lead them, find connections, I kind of found out when I was in ROTC, I was like, okay, like people want to listen to what I have to say, and that kind of drove me. Through college to be a teacher, to help lead multiple kids every year, different kids, different learning styles. And it's just the way I can connect to so many different people and just give them a little piece of me with them as they go to their future.
Yeah, that's good. Cam?
Yeah, so I think mine's kind of two-part. So I think I recognized probably about middle school or somewhere early teens that I felt like God had something for me, right, to go do. But honestly, it was probably more tied to the material things of this earth, right? I thought it was going to be something to do with my profession. And so I thought that, you know, that was the great that he had for me. That was the purpose he had for me. So it wasn't really until probably when I first became a father, somewhere early in that time period, that actually through my wife. So guys, that's a plug. Your wives are queens of discernment, and oftentimes they will speak. He will speak to you through them, right? And we've got to be willing to listen to them. And so she came to me and she said, "I had a vision that God said, you're not going to use what you thought was going to be your purpose for that, right? You're going to use that to lead men."
Yeah.
Right. And that was when it became intimate and real with God, and when it really connected as to this is where I'm supposed to go and this is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah. No, that's really good. So let's build on that thought a little bit, right? Cam, we'll stay with you and then come back through. How are you being intentional about instilling in the hearts of your children that God has created them for a purpose?
So I think it really comes down to the presence that I have in my home, and the home, the culture, the space that I create in my home. Because as I go, my home goes, yes. Right? And so am I willing to affirm my kids, right? Am I willing to love them? Am I willing to call them up into something greater than themselves? Am I willing to pick them up when they fall and to comfort them and to encourage them? And that's gender neutral, right? I mean, yeah, I have two daughters and I have a son, and you know, I was raised kind of like you treat your daughters like a princess, and you beat your son up, and you got to show him the ropes, right? Because life is going to be tough, and there's a piece of that.
Sure.
But all three of my kids need to know what a father's love is.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Scotty?
Yeah, no, for my boys, I just let them know every day how special they are and how perfect they are. And kind of going back to my own story about connecting people, just be kind. Be kind to people, and so many opportunities and friendships will open up, and you'll be able to connect to people just by being kind. And that you find out that as people, we have a lot more in common than we don't have in common.
Yeah.
And so just have an open heart and just be a kind person.
Yeah.
So mine is a wee less, you know what I mean? She's like 10 months. So I remember when my bro had a kid, and they happened to live in different cities. And I mean, he would like drive up to D.C. from like here every weekend, and I'd be like, bro, she like 2 months, like you can give yourself some space, thinking I was being like a good Christian. I was like mentoring him, and then I remember one day he pulled me aside and he was like, nah, bro, I got to do it now or I won't have the like routine, I won't have the habit to be what I need to be when I am closer. So for me, that like sticks with me now, having a young daughter, where I'm like, oh, thank you. Like it first of all, it corrected me, so you got to be open to correction, especially when you think you know leading somebody. But it changes the way I lead Cleo. So for me, it's like every day I'm like practicing talking. You know, I'm trying to respond to who she is,
yes,
not who I want her to be.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, you feisty, but you smart, but you funny. So like, how do I like seed into all of this? Like, how do I? You actually want to listen to podcasts with me, okay? You want to so am I actually being intentional about like investing in who she's like unveiling herself to be, in the same way God does with us, right? Yeah. Like he asks us to sit, take time. He's curious about what we're curious about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I really, in this season of life as a 10 month though, I'm just really trying to explore what she's curious in.
No, it's good. Let's go off script a little bit, because this thought came to me while you all were talking, because this idea of God creating each of us for a purpose, right, and with intent, it means that he shaped us a certain way. He put certain gifts in us, right? Scotty, you alluded to that, right? This ability to connect with people. And when, as a parent, especially as a father, talk to me about the challenge between differentiating between the things in your children that you need to change, that should be altered, that are character-based, versus things that are personality that God has put in there that you don't want to stifle or change, because that's going to help them fulfill their purpose. Talk to me about how you recognize the difference between those two.
I'll jump in and take that one. So my oldest is 11, entering to the teenage years, and I think it's a really unique time because she is finding her voice in our home and in her life and her friend group, right? And so she's constantly kind of testing the boundaries.
Yep.
Right? How much can I be an adult? How much can I, you know, act and think and express an opinion? And how much do I need to find my place in the family unit, right?
Yeah.
And so it's hard, because sometimes, you know, and to top it, she's like a junior version of me, right? I mean, she reminds me so much of how I was as a child. So it's like I'm looking at, I'm like, this is what my parents meant when they said, "You'll see what you're talking about when you're a dad," right? And I'm like, "Mom, got it. It's good."
That's great.
But I have to fight really hard to check myself, right?
Yeah.
Because it's really easy to want to be in this space of like, well, we've got things we've got to get done. We've got a schedule we've got to do. There are values or things that I want her to have, right? And I want, because like, above all, I want her to respect adults and to be able to, you know, so I don't ever want her voice to be disrespectful.
Yeah.
But then I also want her to be an advocate. And if y'all know her mother, right, like, you know that, like, that's going to be a part of her DNA. And I want to champion that. But yeah. I also recognize that I'm the gatekeeper for that.
Yeah.
If I squash that in her at a young age, she's not going to be that advocate. She's not going to be the voice. And that's who God created her to be. So it's a lot of give and take. It's a lot of apology, honestly.
Yes, it
it's
is.
A lot of,
that's
you know
really
what,
good,
hey,
Cam.
I'm sorry that I shut you down back there, right? But then there are times that I got to pull her aside. I got to say, hey, look, I get it. I understand that, you know, you feel this way. You're passionate about this thing. Yep. But let's talk about the way, the right way to handle this and make sure that we're doing better the next time.
Yep. Scotty, you want to take
I would just say, you know, having two younger boys, by no means am I an expert up here. But, you know, I just know my duty as a father is to give them the tools for success, right, in life. And so when there's a moment that comes up, I say, okay, this is a time for me to put that tool in their toolbox so later in life they can reach for it, and it's something that I instilled in them. But it's two different ways with two different kids. Joey's very emotional,
that's
like
fair.
Hands-on, very loving. Brody is definitely my child.
Yeah.
He's exactly like me. And he's more activity-based and stuff like that. So you have the idea, the tools of what you want to do, but two different ways you have to approach it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, with at this age, it's really just being open to exploration.
That's
like,
really
you know,
good.
Just I think in this season of life for us, it's like giving her what we love and then like just creating opportunities for her to explore other stuff. I mean, I think what's big for us is like, you know, I want her to kind of explore the South Side of Richmond of her, or the North Carolinian, but also like the, you know, Culpeper and the Gordonsville, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you
know, Italian music is playing in the background. I'm like, this is your heritage.
Yeah.
You know, like, so, you know, I want her to be able to explore
like
all of the aspects of her, not just that. So sometimes that means, I think, intentionality.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's real easy to just like kind of malaise and let life lead it, but we, you know, I think for me in the season is like being intentional about letting her explore different things.
No, I like it, right? Because it reminds us this idea of our children being formed. There are things that God has put in them, but then there's things that He's expecting you to put in them too,
right?
So that they can fulfill their purpose. All right, let's go to the next one. So every kingdom has a king. Right, someone whose authority that we serve, someone to whom we are loyal above all else. For us, that's Jesus, right? He's our king. Describe for us the moment that you made a vow of devotion to Jesus. So let's bounce to Scotty and give him a turn to go first.
Yeah, July 9th, 2011.
Come on.
It was a day that Derek Jeter went 5 for 5 and hit 3,000 hits, so it's easy to remember.
That's great.
We were at the Mosaic, and I don't know if I was happy because of that, but I just felt
that's awesome.
God was there, and He was really moving in the Mosaic. And Fred, you were up there, and it was just like every other Saturday. You asked for if anybody wanted to come up, and I just said, why not now?
Yeah.
And it was a little bit of a longer walk than it is now.
Yeah.
But I just remember that it was very hard, but just put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
And you're going to make it there. And it's been great ever since.
Yeah. I still remember seeing you coming out in the corner of my eye down that side of the church. So, yeah, it's good. And then seeing the expression on people's faces that had been praying for you as they saw.
It was
saw.
A long time coming.
Yeah. It was really good. Jamal?
So as all things in my life is slightly long-winded, but I'll shorten it.
No, you're good.
But,
we got time.
But I grew up in the church, you know what I mean? My mom and my fam instilled a lot in me. But as I grew up in that church, I just started to notice some inconsistencies. Like, you know, like I was... It just felt like incompatible with the life that people were actually living, but also it didn't seem like people had an issue with it. And I just couldn't live like that. Like, I just couldn't do both. So I was just like, well, you know, I'm out. So as soon as I could drive, I was just like, you know, I would make excuses of why I didn't need to go to church or why I couldn't make rehearsal or whatever it was. And then I just kind of like found my way, kind of just fumbling and feeling through the world on my own. But yeah, I just didn't see authenticity there as I grew older.
Yeah.
So, you fumble through life. I'm 21 now, throwing my 21 birthday party, and it was all of the, you know, rambunctiousness and wildness that you could have. And I remember after, like, you know, God kind of started to, like, make these moments happen throughout the night where, like, everybody was like, oh, Jamal, you're amazing. So, you know, you got this, like, fame and like, you know, appreciation. And then I, like, started looking at how much money I was like, man, I can't believe I'm making this much money in college. And then, you know, I started, you know, like, I was faint. You know, women were attracted to me and, like, excited because it was my party. And, like, it was just all of this stuff that was happening. But after we left Waffle House, or IHOP, whatever it was, at 3 a.m.
That's great. All of the text, chunk,
yeah,
right?
You know, yeah. All of the text buddies were asleep. I had to sit with myself after that 21st birthday. And I found myself, like, crying in a fetal position. Like, man, I just felt so empty. And God knows me, my brain works in math. So he was just like, well, you can change the number in front of the variable, but if you don't change the variable, the equation doesn't spit out anything different.
That's good.
It just spits out more. So he asked me, like, if you think you added more money or more you know, women or more, if more
That's
people
really
were here,
good.
Do you think it would have changed how you felt now? And I was like, nah. So he kind of talked to me about like I was just putting bigger screws into the wall and I needed an anchor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To hang my life on it. So this is, you know, like I said, it's like in the middle of the night. And I was just like, you know, I tried everything else. I haven't given you it 100, so I'll give it to you 100. If you fail, I'm out. But that was like, you know, I'm 34 now, so that was like the night after my 21st birthday. So same thing, January 13th, remember it, 2011. So yeah.
That's good.
It's a good year.
That's good. No, and that's a song we were singing, right? He won't fail. He won't fail. And then to everyone who sat in a math class and have thought, I'm never going to use this again for the rest of my life. That's not true. It might be part of your testimony for Jesus. Yeah, I know. Cam?
Yeah, so similar to Jamal, right? I grew up in the church. And so at a younger age, 9, 10 years old, somewhere exactly, I don't remember the date. Sorry, I can claim July 9th too, so we can all be on the same. I made a vow of devotion, right? And I think in my juvenile mind, I knew what that meant and what I wanted to do with it. But I didn't have the meat on the bone. So as I became a teenager and the things of the world became more attractive, I walked away from it. I put my attention and my effort in those things. And so it wasn't really until probably early 2012, at a service, you were preaching, and God had really been wrestling with me on some things. And after, candidly, I'd walked away from him. I was angry at the way that my life had panned out to date. And so I honestly was really only at church because my wife was nagging me to be at church.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there, you're preaching the message, and you're just ripping away, right? I mean, God is using you to rip away all of the kind of lies that I was telling myself about, you know, what it really means to be a follower of Christ. Yeah. And the icing on the cake, or the nail in the coffin, which way you want to take it, right? Was you walked up to me after that service, and I'm a wreck, man. I'm in tears. I'm sitting there like with Jennifer, and I'm just, you know, I don't know what to do. And you go, that was for you. And I go, man, get out of here. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. You know, but it was, I felt in that sermon and in that moment that it was God saying, like, if you want to dance, this is the time we're going to dance. This is what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
This is what it's going to be a follower of me. And from that moment on, so it cemented what that vow meant, right? It's like I took it in youth and overzealousness, but then I had to go through a period to really understand what that is, and I haven't looked back.
Yeah. It's powerful, isn't it, when you realize the creator of the universe makes you feel seen. Right, you have this sense inside of you that he's watching me, he's talking to me, he has designs for my life, and he's willing to engage me in ways that I understand and engage me in ways that I need him to challenge me, right? That he doesn't shy away
things. I was going to say something, and I was like, yeah, should I? But then when you said that, like, I know for me, I was like, all right, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And then it was hard. like, because I was still in college.
Yeah.
I lived in the, like, party area CNU. So, you know, any given night, you could find whatever you needed.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, it being tough. And he challenged me.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I remember I was making fun of somebody who I felt like was being too, like, it don't take all of that. And I remember God being like, no, no, you don't understand that yet.
Yeah.
Like, fall back. You'll see in time.
Yeah.
And that was like the first time that I didn't just feel love, but I felt lovingly challenged.
Mm.
That, and I was like, well, what has he got that I don't? And I was like, oh, he reads his Bible. Oh, he's spending time in prayer. Like, it's not just a, so, you know, just for the grace part, like, I made that devotion in that night of my birthday, but I probably, yeah. it really didn't kick in until like June, midsummer,
yeah.
where I was like, actually, like, I could take it for myself.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just like yeah. leading.
Well, and I think that's a big part of it too, right? Because we can glorify, we can social media-ize what that's supposed to look like, right? We all see the Instagram, right? And we think that that's everybody's living the perfect life that we're not, and we're just watching the highlights, right? And yeah, everybody's walk is going to be different, and so for some of us, for me, you know, maybe for you, for others. You've got to go through a valley. You've got to go through a piece for God to be, because that was the thing that was so powerful for me is 2012, to know that it had been 15 years or so at that point or more in my life that I had really kind of been out on my own. For him to come back, and even though I was angry and I felt he was a hypocrite and that he had broken his promise to me, right? He still was able to reach me and make me feel seen, like you said. And that was so transformational. It was huge.
That's good. Let's stay with that theme a little bit. So in the aftermath of making a vow of devotion to Christ, what was a, like you talked about reading the Bible, what was an appetite that came alive inside of you that you didn't have before, a desire for something, right, that wasn't there before, that maybe it was a, You did it out of obligation before, but now all of a sudden you feel this passion inside of you for and fill in the blank.
Well, reading the Bible.
It was scripture, yeah.
Yeah, for me it was, excuse me, growing up in an Episcopalian church.
Yeah.
It was, you know, hey, we're going to open up this hymn and get this book, and that just wasn't me. And so when I decided to make a vow, and we do it how we do it with everything on the screen and the music, I said, this is very appealing to me. And so I wanted to make sure that I showed up every Saturday and I could, even if I didn't open the Bible, I could show up and I could get it through the message and be fully, you know, engaged.
That's good.
Sounds cheesy, but loving people.
No, like, come I was on, just talk very, about that a little bit.
I was just very transactional with people. And even my best friends, they loved me and respected me. And I remember as I was like stumbling to the faith through those like, you know, that January to June phase, one of them pulled, you know, they had made a joke about it. I don't care about them. And I was like, what do you mean? It was like, no, we all know you. We only here because we add value to your life.
Wow.
Like, if we didn't play a role, we wouldn't be here. And I was like, I don't feel that way. And they were like, no. Nah. And then I like literally six dudes all in the dorm were like, yeah, bro. And I was like, dang.
Yeah.
And I had just never thought that that's how they thought I felt about them. And that's not how I felt in my heart, but I clearly my actions weren't showing that.
Sure.
So for me, it was actually like going on a journey to like understand what it meant to actually like love people genuinely.
Wow.
And not like because they served a purpose or because they, you know, happened to be near enough for me to like make them feel. Because I was, to Scotty's point, I was good at like making friends,
right.
But I don't think people felt that I was as much a friend to them as they were to me. You know,
no, that's powerful because anybody that knows you now knows there's nothing about you that's transactional.
Yeah.
Right? And so, that's
time.
Took some time. That's right. Clay on the potter's wheel.
So, you know, back to the scripture piece, right? It was one of those things like growing up in the church. I read the Bible. I memorized Bible. I did everything that a good little church boy would do, right? And probably read the Bible cover to cover, right? And I thought in my mind, like, I got it. Like, I put this book on the shelf, but it was amazing to me in that kind of reawakening of how alive His Word came, and you know, just the every day, it just felt like it was something new.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what happened? I mean, and then I was pressing into that, like, why all of a sudden is this Word alive to me where before it was just ink on paper?
Yeah, that's really good. So let's talk about Jesus being your king, right? You having children, and this desire that I know you carry, right, is for Jesus to also be their king, right? Is that your children have been born into your home, or maybe there's a father out there and children have been adopted into a home or fostered into a home or married into a home, right? Blended family. And Jesus is your king. Make it a kind of a dual answer. What are you doing to point your children to Jesus? And then maybe what's something you could say to encourage other fathers that are trying to do the same thing? Jamal?
Yeah, I would say something I'm doing is in making sure that what I do actually is visible. Because I think, you know, I'm like, I receive more audibly,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Or like audio and reading at the same time. So I would generally like just audio my Bible or audio books I'm reading. But I know it's kind of hard for her to understand what I'm doing. But when I pull out the Bible itself, it kind of makes a little more sense to
That's
her.
That's good.
So for me, it's like, okay, I know this is convenient for me, but she really won't know what I'm doing. It doesn't look me kind of scrolling on Instagram looks the same as me.
Yeah, she doesn't know the difference.
She doesn't know the difference. Yeah. So for me, it's like kind of making sure she can tell the difference by how I'm acting. And then I always say, you know, as far as like encouragement, I would say like just trust God's time. You know what I mean? I think sometimes just the world can, because Satan is like divisive and tactical and strategic. You know what I mean? He, you know, I was just talking to somebody today, like, it's not a matter of whether you're on the battlefield, it's just kind of navigating the war. You know what I mean? He's always active. And
war.
I think one of the big things he does is, like, he will kind of use what you're seeing in other battlefields to kind of, like, box you in. So I know for me, I'm like, oh, man, am I getting old? Like, should I have had a kid sooner? Like, you know, my knees, am I going to be able to run? You know what I mean? When she, you know, so I just, you know, I had all these pressures on myself before becoming a father that I didn't actually know. I was kind of putting unnecessary pressure on myself. So then when I became a father, the pressure flipped, right? Because he's strategic. So then it became, okay, well, can you actually be a father? Like, you know, you may have mentored all of these people before. You may have been like a fatherly figure to people, but you weren't a father.
No,
and you
good.
Had your own like father struggles. So like, do you actually have enough to offer? And shout out to my wife. Like, I remember like she just knew something was off. It took a couple of days. You know, I can be a little, I process in my head. So sometimes it takes a little while for me to get it out. And I remember like just sharing, like, I just feel like I don't have enough. Like, like people think I would be a good father, but I haven't seen it. You know what I mean? And, and I feel like God was like, she kind of helped me in that conversation of just helping me to understand, like, God has actually been fathering me through all of these tough moments.
That's good.
You know, Satan like used weird stuff like, man, you never cut, you didn't cut grass. Last time you cut grass, you had an asthma attack when you was 13. How are you supposed to take care of your house? And then I'm like, oh, I just wear a mask. And like, you know, now I look like I'm, you know, getting ready to go into the desert when I go cut grass. But, you know, it's like, and I remember like God encouraging me in that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I killed a baby snake, you know, and God's like,
come on,
I got you. You know what I mean? And so it was one of those things where I was so fearful of like, if I could do what I needed to do to be a father. And my wife kind of helped me to like take a step back and see how God had been fathering me and walking me through these like little baby steps.
That's good.
Right. To prove that I could do it.
That's good. Scotty.
Yeah. I just I want my boys to know that God is real. Right.
Yeah.
He just doesn't live in a book in stories.
That's really
right.
Good.
That their king, their daddy hears from God, their mom hears from God, their teacher at school hears from God. And so let them be aware that he's working.
Yeah.
And hopefully they develop that skill one day of hearing from God, either from like their mother reading a scripture and he talks to her, or like me when I'm laying down at night and it's quiet, when I'm cutting the grass, I hear from God. So everybody's different.
Yeah.
They're going to find theirs, but
that's really good,
he's moving and it's real. And just an encouragement for other fathers is the devil wants to get you alone, right? And you don't know what you don't know. And so it's about showing up, hearing from other men, getting a different perspective.
So good.
Even there's been times that, you know, Cam has spoke to my kids and God has spoke through him to my kids. So yeah. It's not just me as my king, but another king to my family.
Come on, Cam.
Yeah, I think the greatest teacher, the greatest way to do this, right, is a healthy marriage and how I love their mother, right?
Yeah. So good.
It's the most visible demonstration of God's love for me and how I love them. And
yes.
It can't just be all in private, right? It's got to be, they've got to see it done well in the home. And so that's hard. And that requires me to go back to that A word of apologizing again, right? A lot, right? Because when I do something that I recognize doesn't represent God's love, I've got to be able to you know, be vulnerable and to be transparent with my home and say, this wasn't the right thing to do, right?
Yeah.
And there's a better way. And it matters, right? I mean, like, kids, it's the most tangible way a child can understand love is how they see that,
so
right?
Good.
And so it's a tough order, but it's a tall task. But I think it's something that you have to commit to. And so my word of encouragement to fathers and to prospective future fathers, right, is give yourself grace, right? There's no expectation for perfection.
Yeah.
Right? We're not going to be.
That's
good. And there's going to be a million self-help books and blog articles and, you know, social media influencers are going to tell you that you've got to do X, Y, Z steps to get your home right, to be the best dad, to do the thing.
Right.
And that's, you've got to go on your own journey.
Sure.
Each one of us has a unique journey as a father.
That's good.
And we've got to be willing to embrace it and to pull guys in, Scotty, like you say, and ask for help and get outside perspective and counsel, but be willing to cut ourselves some slack when we don't make a mistake, right? Go back. You got to apologize, though. You can't just cut yourself slack and not apologize. You've got to be willing to say, I messed up.
That's good. Yeah, as you were talking, it made me think, borrowing a phrase from Jamal about being transactional in a relationship, it just made me wonder how many kids, their view of God and Christianity is transactional because the marriage they watched in their home growing up was a transactional relationship.
Absolutely.
Right? And not a true covenant, right? Passion-filled relationship. That's good. So let's do this. We've got three fathers up here, three fathers that I respect and admire. If there was something that you wanted to say, right? If there was one thing that you could say to a father that's listening today, what would that one thing be? And Scotty, let's start with you. We'll do Cam, Jamal, and then I'm going to jump in on this one too.
Kind of going back to what Cam was saying, is the one thing I would say is that you're doing a great job. Show up. Give 100% effort. Know that you have a running mate with the mother, with the partner, whatever it is. You're not by yourself. And just be present. And not just showing up, but showing up and caring. Being active. Being interested in what your kids are interested in. I remember a quick story. Joey wanted to play Minecraft. I never even knew what that was. So I said, all right, let's buy Minecraft. I'm going to play it to make sure it's safe first. I was up till like 2 o'clock in the morning, like mining for diamonds, you know, but I took interest in what he was interested
in. So good, Scotty. So good.
No, that's what I was going to say is, I mean, you've got to be willing to meet your kids where they're at.
Yeah.
Right. And their hobbies and passions have to be yours.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I've got, like, for me, with my three kids, I've got the spectrum. I mean, I'm naturally a sports guy, kind of, you know, and I've got that a little bit, right? But I've also got a princess who likes painted nails and hair done, and I've done all those things too, right? And I be willing to embrace and enjoy it. And the idea that it's fleeting, right?
Yeah.
Like it is a short, and I'm kind of at the midpoint, so to speak. I've reached the midpoint of my parenting journey.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, the quote unquote finish, and we never really ends, right? But you know, the official end, I'm like, it's too close.
Yeah.
like, where did, like, I had a memory pop up on my phone of my oldest from like 7 years ago, and this little baby face is staring back at me, and now she looks like a woman, and I'm like, what am I supposed to do with that?
Yeah.
Right? Like, how am I supposed to handle this? But I've got to be, if you blink, you're going to miss it. If you think that you're going to have time to circle back to it and make up, like, I've talked to guys in the past and they've told me, well, you know, I'm really dedicated on this thing right now because it's really important for us or for me or for my family or whatever. And then I'm going to make it up on the end.
Right.
And so many times,
Can't do it.
That ship has sailed, and you never get a chance to make it up.
Yeah, that's really good.
I would say kind of like a two-sided coin. The cross is enough. Like, you really got to embrace that, because there's going to be some days where you don't feel like it enough.
Yeah.
And you got to just trust that the cross is enough. You know, you don't know if you've made enough change or you can't keep the change up. You just got to, like, let it breathe. But I feel like what's kind of helped me with that is, you know, being willing to be fathered. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think just because of how I grew up, I was always like more of a domineering, like not domineering, but like I was just more like a go-getter. Like, I'm good. You know, I'm the person you don't got to worry about. So that really don't work, you know, just period. Or especially as a father. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm super grateful to y'all. You know, I installed a little vanity light,
come
and I'm like,
on. I know we got that text. We're like, come on,
I did it. You know what I mean? But it even though that was like a text of joy, it like took me dying to the desire to be okay on my own and be willing to be fathered and mentored by people who've done it before and allow them to celebrate with me.
Yeah.
You know, I think because I've kind of grew up being like, oh, I'm good.
Yep.
You don't celebrate when you're good because you're supposed to have it together.
No,
so I think for me, being able to celebrate when I'm good, it gives me the space to be vulnerable when I'm not. You know what I mean?
We're going to be off the clock just a hair today, but this is an important moment. Let's just to give people a frame of reference, because this is intentional about, you know, how long you've been married and the ages of your kids, so that people can appreciate the span. So like Vanessa and I've been married for 27 years, right? And we're on the verge of empty nesters, right? And so kids 23, 21, and 20. And so to give us your season of life.
Married almost 5 years.
Come on.
And then Cleo is 10 months.
10 months, yes. 10.
12 years in May, right? This past May. Joey is 9 and Brody is 4.
Okay.
Married for 14 years, and then I've got 3. So Jerry's 11, Macklin is 8, and Caius is 5.
That's good. That's good. Right. I think it's appreciate, right, for people to get a feel for, you know, dads in the church. We're in different seasons of life. I know the one that I would throw out if I was going to answer this question is that first is that God picked you for these children, right? We don't choose our children. God chooses which home he's going to put those children into. And so just to try to instill in men the sacred responsibility that the creator of the universe picked you to be the father of these kids, right? And then the practical advice I would give to them is that if you don't have some men in your life who love Jesus with all their heart, who have conquered giants that you've not yet faced, then you're not going to be the father that you need to be. And then what I would say to men that maybe are in this room or watching online, if you're trying to answer that question and that's a blank for you, and there are no men in your life who love Jesus and who you can reach out to that have conquered giants that you've not yet faced, then they need to keep showing up here. And by this time next year, they'll have a list, just like each of us have a list of men just like that.
I want to go back to that point you just made about that God picked you for your children, right? Or gave you your children. Because I think that's an important point. I think a lot of times we as fathers can be in seasons of life, especially, you know, as our kids get older and they start to develop their own personalities, we sit there and think that, man, it'd be so much easier if my kid was just like me.
Yeah.
Right? When we could talk about the same things, we would think about things the same way, we'd like to eat the same foods. And oftentimes we end up with kids that are almost diametrically opposite of who we are, right? Like, they're, you know, and you're like, who are you and how are you mine, right?
Yeah.
And but what that is that is God giving us that child for our own sanctification. Yeah. It's our own journey, right?
Yeah, that's good.
Of being made whole and made complete. And I think men can shirk that off and say that that's not their responsibility, that it's, I'm just supposed to get my kid to adulthood and get him out of my house. No, just the same way that God gives you a wife, you've got to be willing to own that relationship with your children, because there is a growth and a refining in your relationship with your children that you're not going to have if you just shepherd them to get out of your house.
That's really good.
I mean, and if I could tag on that, like, I was single for a while, you know what I mean, before I got married or had kids or whatever. So in the same way that you, like, God put those children in your life, I just was very intentional about, like, practicing for it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, I served in the youth group. I worked at schools. I volunteered in different places. Because I remember that as I was growing up, God always placed men in my life in different stages of life who, like, fathered me or mentored me along the way to give me insight. So, I mean, I would, and you know, sometimes I almost became like an adoptive son to them. Sometimes I, you know, it was just for a season to get me through. So I just encourage you, even if you don't have kids, if you do have kids, like, there may be people you need to father or mentor along the way, but you can't really do that. These people were gracious enough to love their family, but also extend their family to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think as Christians, we're called to extend our family.
Yep.
KB is like a rapper. He said that in Christianity, like, strangers become neighbors and neighbors become family. You know what I mean?
Good.
So I think in that, I think it's so easy to be like, oh, I don't got kids yet.
Yeah.
Or, oh, yeah, like, my family's locked. But I think there is, I mean, especially like for you know, so it might be adoption, it might be, you know, fostering or just taking care of family for a season.
Yeah.
But I do, you just wanted to call out too that, like, sometimes the fathering we do may not be in that physical, paternal role.
That's true.
But it might just be who God is calling us to be, who God is calling to be in our community for a season.
And I'll piggyback and say that I think any of us who are parents in here will gladly accept anybody who's willing to come get some practice and help us out.
That's so good. We
are not going to fight you all for that.
That's good. All right, so this is our close here, is that, you know, there's three more questions, but each of you are just going to take one of them, right? And so I'm going to read it, and then just whoever is going to take this one as you've worked out, you just jump in. And the first one is this: every kingdom has enemies, and God's kingdom is no different. The devil goes to the tactic, right, of deception. So here's the question: was there a lie that you had to overcome about what being a father was really about?
Yeah, that was me. So I kind of talked about it a little bit, but I think the lie that I had to overcome was that the cross wasn't enough, right? That, you know, my 11 years, whatever years in, wasn't enough to overcome the, like, 20 years out. You know what I mean? So, but Christian math isn't normal math. You know what I mean? So it doesn't,
I like it.
You know what I mean? You don't need to, need to be equate out for God to do something different. And then also in a moment, things can change. So I think for me, it was just trusting that, like, God had done enough, and what he had done yet, he was ready to do when the time came.
Yeah, that's good, Jamal. And we're making history here tonight, because it's the first time in the history of Father's Day messages that math has been used twice.
I almost put out science. I almost said catalyst, but I didn't. I didn't. I love enzymes.
This is really good. This is really good. So the next one is this: you can't talk about kingdom and not talk about community. So what has it meant for you and for your family for City Life Church to be your kingdom community?
Yes, this is mine. So this is not hyperbole saying this. I would not be sitting here right now.
Yep.
Like, I'm not exaggerating that at all. I would not be married.
Yep.
I don't know where I'd be and what I'd be doing if it was not for community.
So good.
Just to give the context, the backstory, you guys know, because we've been doing life together for over a decade. But for everyone else, right, my wife and I were high school sweethearts. We dated for 9 years through high school and college before we got married. And so when we say 14 years, we've been together for 23 years, over half of our lives. And about a year into our marriage, she looked at me and she was like, I can't do this anymore. And I was like, what are you talking? Like, we've been together for 10 years. What are you, you're not going anywhere. And knowing that, like, loyalty is her number one characteristic, yeah, right? So I'm like, you're not going anywhere. But she was serious. And I needed something. I was angry at life, right? I was angry that I mentioned that earlier, right? My life hadn't turned out the way that I wanted it to turn out. I thought I would be somewhere other than I was. I was angry at God. I got, you know.
Yeah.
And to come into community and never really, I think, having a sense outside of a family dynamic, but we all know that our biological families, it's we get to pick some and
or, yeah,
you know, we others we don't, right? You know, it's but I had healthy marriages. I had godly men, right? I had people who loved me enough to care about me and mm-hmm. to ask me a hard question,
yeah,
were patient enough to sit with me and talk to me about, you know, anything, right?
Yeah.
And you know, people like Jim and Debbie Bell who opened their home to us and just let me and my wife just come hang out and, yeah, and then, you know, begin to, you know, show us what leadership
so
was
good.
And all of these things. And it changed who we were. It, yeah, transformed us,
yes,
right?
It did.
And so I, like, again, it's not an exaggeration to say we would
That's
not
good,
be
Cam.
Here
That's
if it
really
wasn't
good.
For community.
So good. So good. So Scotty, for you, within that larger community, right, we need a small group of men that we can lean into. No hero in any story makes it alone. So where can we find that at City Life for men that are here? Who, like when you just said to, you know, almost casually, we've been doing life together for 10 years, right? That's powerful, right? For guys that are here in the room or watching online, that they've not been doing life with other men who love Jesus for 10 years, much less 1 year. Where can they find that here?
Yeah, what that looks like is showing up, right?
Come on.
And that's coming to here at church every Saturday. It's the life groups we have, either dedicated men's life groups like Base Camp, right? I remember when I first went to Base Camp, it took a lot just for me to get there, like just to get out of bed on a fourth Saturday. And then you realize how much is there.
Yeah.
It's a gold mine. Life groups, right? Marriage groups. I told Cam the other week, every life group and base camp I go to, I never leave saying, well, that was a waste of time,
yeah,
right? Like, there was always something good, right?
So
and most
good.
Of the time, there's free food.
Come
that helps,
preach.
Too, right?
Preach.
At least pickled eggs at our life,
yes,
group, right?
Yes.
But it's really putting yourself out there, right? I feel like a lot of people feel like they're disconnected or they're not connecting, and they're waiting for somebody to walk towards them, and they need to walk towards somebody, right? It's uncomfortable, right?
It's
we
really
all
good.
Feel awkward, weird, like trying to make that walk and that connection, but that's us. That's us dying to ourselves, right? Jesus says, walk,
Come
go.
On. So good. Base camp, you mentioned. Tell us. You said fourth Saturday.
Fourth Saturday every month.
Time and where?
Yeah, it's 8 to 9:30-ish.
Yep.
You know,
8 to 9:30.
Long-winded.
Yeah, in the chapel right over here.
Yep. Right there.
You can see me. I do the email list. We'll get you on the email. So give you that reminder on Friday night to go to bed, to wake up Saturday morning.
Yeah, and then it's fourth Saturday of the month. And then tell us a little bit, just as we close, like, what are they walking into? Like, for guys that have never been in a small group setting and might have all these crazy ideas, right, that they're going to have to tell their deepest, darkest secrets.
Right,
so
no,
what happens at Base
right,
Camp?
Right, a lot of growing, but it's not weird. It's not your grandpa's Cracker Barrel meeting, right? We
no
get
coffee and donuts,
yeah,
sorry.
We get... We love on each other. And we're all trying to get to the same goal of being a great dad, a great husband, a great Christian. We sit in a circle. Normally, myself, Cam, Jamal, Fred, we have a message prepared. And you can talk as little or as lot.
That's important.
Stan,
that's
talk
important.
A lot as you want.
Yes.
But you'd be surprised at the people like Brennan the other week that said, I came in here so much didn't speak, but how much I took back.
Yeah.
Right? And he finally got to the point where he's now diving into the conversation. Yeah. So like I said before, I have never, even when I was a beginner, never showed up and said, wow, that was a waste of my time.
Yeah. No, it's a safe zone, right? You can show up and not say anything, and that's okay. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's worth saying that you really can't describe it until you see it.
Yeah.
And what it's going to require is courage for you to show up. Because you're going to walk into a room and it's going to be, you know, a small group of guys, you know, somewhere 5, 10, 15, something like that, right? Depends on the Saturday. But and if you don't know anybody closely, it's going to feel like, well, we're sitting in the circle and now they're going to call on me and I'm going to have to talk. Scotty debunked that. We're not going to make you talk. But just come
and
be willing to listen, because it really, I can't. It's not your father's men's group.
Yep.
It's not your grandfather's men's group. It's not. It's just the level of camaraderie, brotherhood, just caring for each other, the compassion, the vulnerability, transparency.
Yep.
All let's keep rolling with the words, right? I mean, like, it's all there in spades. And I am a firm believer. You cannot walk into that circle and walk out unchanged.
That's good. That's good. Can you give it up for them? So good. If you want to stand with me as we close, thank you for being gracious with us, letting us get off the clock a little bit. Hey, just a couple of things. One is, if you're visiting, we would love, even if you weren't planning on it, we would love for you to just give us a couple of extra minutes down in the cafe. There's some desserts down there. There's some refreshments. If you've got kids in childcare, grab them, bring them down, and just share a few minutes. And then, if not, then we just want to invite you, hang out in here a little bit. Just don't leave here tonight without saying hello to somebody. So, Father, we thank you for this time that we've had to share together. We thank you for Cam and for Scotty and Jamal, for them being willing to open up their lives and in some personal ways, Lord, to give us a glimpse of what it's been like for their journey, for what it's been like for them pursuing what it means to be a kingdom father. For every dad that's here, everyone that's watching online, help us to become the father that you have called and created us to be. We know, God, that you're waiting for us, as Scotty already said, to move towards you. I pray that if nothing else, Lord, if there's no other phrase that fathers take away from tonight, that they would take away this one, that it's time for us to lean in. It's time for us to lean into our questions. It's time for us to lean into faith in Christ. It's time for us to lean into our marriages and lean into parenting. It's time for us, oh God, to lean into this reality that you called and created us for a kingdom purpose, that there is a place for us at your table. There's thrones that you created for us to rule, leadership that we're supposed to bring. In Christ's name, come on. And everybody said together, amen. We'll see you next week.